We may just deal with the front end with apologies. We have an apology from Councillor Brown. I'll move that we receive that apology, seconded by Councillor Neal. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Leave of absence, just for our noting, Councillor Deaker. Confirmation of the agenda. No issues there with regards to any changes for any urgency or matter of urgency. No. Item 5, conflict of interest, just the standard reminder about that particular issue. Public forum, we have no public forum and no presentations, and we move down to item 8, which is the confirmation of the minutes which have been circulated. The technical committee held on the 13th of September 2017. Would someone like to move that they are true and correct? Moved by Councillor Robertson, seconded by Councillor Hope. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Moving on to the director's report. Gavin, would you like to introduce it or just work your way through the various items in the report?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just two items I'd like to speak to. The first is paragraph 2, Southern Alpine Lakes. I've just recorded there that I've met with my counterparts at Environment Canterbury and Environment Southland around a process for closer collaboration between our three councils that was very productive. And what we've agreed is to now develop a process for how we actually go about that, involving experts to inform a program, something like we did last year with the lake snow issue, but much broader, covering lakes issues generally. We also recognise that this is happening in parallel with LTP development, and so in the meantime we'll make some provision in our LTPs for whatever emerges from that program.
So just to confirm, so the plan is to have a placeholder of some figure, some amount, as part of the LTP process?
Yes, certainly for this council, that's how we intend handling
okay.
that.
Okay. And the other query was just around, just looking at those three bullet points, the second bullet point, and it probably links in with the last sentence. Is there anything else you can elaborate on in terms of those discussions, particularly with potential research projects? Is there anything you can share with us, or is it still too early?
Too early, Mr. Chairman. The start point is to identify the needs of the three councils, and then we can get into some of the research question details.
Questions, queries? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I missed the first part of it, but I assume what we're talking about here is Southern Alpine Lakes and research.
Correct.
So my question is how do we manage the scope of our research in relation to MPI? So, for example, with Lake Snow, what we're saying is MPI are taking responsibility for that research. So in terms of the relationship between Environment South, the regional councils, is it possible, for a potential future Lake Snow to sort of slip through the cracks? Because it's outside of our scope. I mean, how generic is the scope of these regional councils in relation to the Alpine Lakes? Does it cover 100% of the issues, or does it cover 50% of the issues?
Question for the...
I am on the right page.
Director? Is that answerable?
At the moment, we have a very broad scope, and so I'm not sure I can answer the question with... any detail, except it's dealing with the quality and state of the lakes, the Alpine Lakes, in its broadest sense. So the start point is what would the needs of the three councils be?
I mean, should there be a fourth partner in the MPI?
Mr. Chairman, for the moment, we're focusing very narrowly on what the needs of the three councils are, and then when it comes to implementation and design of a program, that's when we will involve other potential partners, such as MPI and the universities. But for the moment, we're focusing very closely on what are the needs of the three councils at the moment, as we understand them to be.
Yeah, okay.
So the MPI question will be very much based on the topic, research topic at the time, and whether the criteria meets their funding, or the funding criteria. So once we get to a to stage where we've identified a research topic, we then go cap in hand to MPI, and whether we meet their criteria or not, that won't be determined until we've got something in front of them.
Yes, for example. Yep. But the start point is to make sure that the three councils are aligned in terms of our individual and collective priorities for research across the southern Alpine Lakes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton, did I see your hand pop up?
No.
Good. I saw someone's hand pop up.
Oh, it's okay.
Councillor Robertson,
it was
sorry.
Me, but covered that.
Okay. Any other queries there? Item two on the director's report. If not, Gavin, you're going to speak to one other. Leithan Dundas, was it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just...
Sorry,
item three, if you're going to leap straight to Leith. There's item three, the climate change and sea level rise. I mean, one of the things that it seems to me is that we need to be able to help local government with respect to climate change and sea level rise is some assistance in being able to start thinking about staying put, retreating, policy going forward, and to make that a bit more rational and easier for local government rather than, and take some of the politics out of it potentially. Is the intention of the work that's being done here to do that? I got a whiff that it might be, that's why I'm asking the question. That it might actually end up with that.
Mr. Chairman, I think those are matters that are being dealt with at a national level through things like the Climate Change Adaptation Technical Working Group, which is looking at a national level around adaptation. Some of the things I've cited here are some of the more technical details that we're dealing with on sea level rise. I'm not sure if that answers your
question.
This
is much more technically focused.
It's much more technically focused. Yes, this is very narrowly around sea level rise. And as I reported there, one of the work streams of local government New Zealand is looking at the effects of sea level rise on infrastructure, a very narrow technical question, and that's one of the initiatives I'm involved in.
That's fine. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Item four.
Mr. Chairman, I just noted... on page 11 of the agenda, the matter to do with the Dundas Street stage of the Leith Flood Protection Scheme. I've just noted there that it's taking a bit more time to complete the hydraulic investigations than initially expected, and that's largely because of the complexity of trying to fit infrastructure around an existing bridge. And we've ended up with design and procurement starting to run in parallel and all converging on the Christmas break, and that's just creating too much risk. So we've made the decision just to move the construction phase a little bit out into next calendar year, and that will give us more time to make design decisions and then to run a procurement process with a bit more time. So I'm just flagging that in my director's report to you. And we'll make provision in the LTP for the work that will now take place in the following financial year.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Palmer. Any questions regarding item four? If not, any questions or comment regarding item six? It's the urban water management.
What about five?
Sorry, Councillor Scott.
Did you skip item five?
I may have.
Robson Lagoon Improvements.
Sorry.
I just wondered if the director could just give us a little bit of background there regarding the automatic wear. And it says, while automation has some operational risks, it is likely to be more effective than the alternatives of a fixed wear, and just what those risks actually are and how the risks are managed.
Mr. Chairman, the risks are things like disruption of power supply.
Oh, yeah.
We have that with an automatic structure, whereas we don't have that with a fixed weir. Other risks are things like it jamming with...
So how would that be managed then?
I think that will remain a risk. I don't think this situation is so critical that we have to have standby generation or an upgraded power supply. I think it has to be an accepted risk. Another risk will be the effect of debris on a movable structure, blocking it either fully open or fully closed, and we've assessed the effects of that, and we think they're tolerable risks, but I think it's about managing the community expectations around those risks. And it's been very, very clear that that choice has certain risks that you don't have with a fixed weir.
OK, so, and if it did jam open or the power went off, what is the consequence of that?
If the weir jams open, then we end up putting more water down the western diversion channel.
Which, and where the lagoon would suffer?
And less water into the lagoon, so that the lagoon level might fall. But we've assessed that risk and we think it is acceptable.
Okay.
Thank you, Councillor Scott.
Thank you.
Sorry, my apologies to jump around from item to item, but are there any other questions associated with any of the items in the Director's report or comments? Councillor Laws.
Are we doing the air quality issue? Or is that going to be separate?
Next, separate paper. No further comment? Would someone like to move that the report is noted? Moved by Councillor Robertson, seconded by Councillor Lawton. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Now, moving on to the next item, which is the air management planning, air quality research opportunities. And we have on your staff here Dr. Palmer.
Yes, from Deborah Mills, air quality scientist, and Dr. Olsen's team. She's the author of the report, and I'm sure she's happy to take any questions around her report.
Welcome, Ms. Mills. Nice for you to be here. Was there any comment that you wanted to make initially with regards to the report?
Mr. Chairman, if I might just present the report and walk you through a little bit of it. So
absolutely. You feel free to, if you wish to come up here or from there, you're fine.
Probably loud enough from here.
Okay. We're in your hands.
Thanks. This paper really lays out the scope of the National Air Quality Strategy, research strategy, and ORC's alignment within that framework. So to do that, the introduction provides a bit of background about how the national strategy was developed, the origins of that. The national strategy was formulated in 2012 and was designed using a consultative process with all councils. And as part of that process, the ORC provided input based on our own internal list of priority interests and projects. Ultimately, the national work was meant to provide a prioritized list of topics and possible projects that would help fulfill needs of all councils. So it was truly a national strategy. And you can see those strategy topics in the strategy summary that was also circulated. Of those 20 nationally driven topics, ORC had a strong interest in about 8 of those topics. And those are described in Section 3. And you can see there's quite a broad range of issues and interests, anything from technological solutions to air quality emissions, understanding how we can create behavior change, and how we can measure the effectiveness of our policies. So it's a wide range of interests that we do have. A number of projects have fallen out of the national strategy topics, and Section 4 of the report highlights what some of those efforts have been. NEWA has delivered on several projects, low-cost monitors, looking at spatial studies, wood burner emission reviews. ECAN has developed a number of projects as well, as has MFE and other CRIs. This Section 4, also mentions some of the work that ORC has delivered. Numerous spatial studies, which many of you will be familiar with. Source apportionment work in Dunedin to help us understand the composition of pollutants in town. Studies on possible engineering solutions to the air quality issues in Central. the recent emissions inventory, home heating surveys, and the like. The national strategy continues to evolve and will continue to evolve based on council needs and will no doubt be influenced and pushed by the national standards review, if and when that happens. In terms of current strategic thinking, Section 5 details a recently updated list of those national interest topics and talks more about ORC's current thinking on research, particularly in two areas. One is technology, and one are health effect studies. And examples of the ideas that we're considering are given in this Section 5. As for technology, we've talked an awful lot about it, and some of the initiatives and ideas include technology transfer, which means more collaboration and linkages with overseas researchers, where a lot of the work on burner design is being done, field testing of certain products, add-ons, miniaturized electronic electrostatic precipitators and the like, things we've brought to council before, those types of ideas. And in terms of health studies, you'll see that we have initiated preliminary talks with the University of Otago's Medical School in Wellington in collaboration with Greater Wellington Regional Council, because we both have interests in devising methodologies to do small town studies on health effects. As you know, most of the health studies are done on large metropolitan areas, frequently overseas. We'd like to understand, well, how can we measure health effects in our towns? So that's a roundup of the national strategy, our regional ideas, and where we fit into that. And with that said, the recommendations, I believe, are that the report is noted and that that you endorse these ideas for consideration for inclusion into the draft long-term plan when that process hits the floor.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Mills. Maybe some questions for you before
happy
you sit down.
Questions.
Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, look, thank you very much for the report. It's good to have this information, but I was really quite disappointed with the range of topics under discussion here. We're not going back to windmills, so those who remember those days, we remember that. But what, to my mind, we are still very much in the groove of air quality. Improving air quality is about reducing what comes out of chimneys. Right? And there's an awful lot of that thinking still in here. From a point of view of research, I would have hoped to have seen in a list like this research around potential policy initiatives which might make adoption of electricity with respect to running costs, not necessarily capital cost, worthwhile. Research around particularly, and I think this is a particularly important area for Central Otago, around community heating, what might make community heating systems work in brand new greenfield subdivisions, which don't involve chimneys and things coming out. What I know is that at a local level, we feel that all we can do is treat the symptom of stuff coming out of chimneys. And we know that no matter what we do to improve that, it's going to cost some money, but so will the other things. So, but at this stage of the game, it's very difficult to get an idea of whether the likes of community-based heating, the likes of wider policy initiatives around, whether it's electricity pricing long-term or not, I don't know, whether those things are actually possible. And they are the things that get much closer to treating the illness rather than the symptom. Because I'm always concerned that we're never actually going, we're playing catch up and we're never quite going to get there. I'm uncertain about how we could go back into this process and get more consideration of those things. I guess my question is, was there consideration given, or do you think that it might be possible to extend the thinking on this from a national perspective?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you're absolutely right. There are larger structural issues around infrastructure, energy, delivery systems that impact all regions, Otago particularly, electricity prices, pellet supply and surety, things like that, that do need to be looked at. And originally, out of those 20 national objectives and the 8 that we concurred with strongly, those issues are highlighted. Those are broader national issues that, of course, get advanced through the National Air Quality Working Group, the RMG group with MFE. And we will continue to advocate for understanding how those issues impact us and where we can work through some of those on a national level. I think this paper probably highlights more of closer local regional work for us that we're kind of in a shorter term more interested in. But certainly all those issues are of importance to us.
I'll certainly encourage that. More of a push in that area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Lewis.
Ever since this issue has been around this table, I've always asked for the empirical proof that there's a problem. And I think the last time I asked that around this table, I was assured by staff that I'd receive a study of the health, the relationship between health deficits and air quality, and I still haven't got it. So I haven't seen anything around the table in the month, in the year in which I've been a councillor that says there's a problem that is having a certifiable effect upon the health of Otago and particularly central Otago residents. Still waiting. Where's the proof? So before you actually decide that you're going to do something, identify if you've got a problem. The second thing, I'm still waiting for that proof. And so are the people of central Otago. Can I say, if the ORC thinks of going down this route, we need to be convinced there's a problem. The second thing is, my understanding of this is, if there is a health problem, it's to do with particulate matter of 2.5 micrometres or less, or shortly known as PM2.5. But we keep measuring in PM10. And yet a number of other councils around New Zealand, I've noticed, are measuring 2.5, because apparently that has the greater health negatives. So are we actually ever going to measure PM2.5 in Otago and in central Otago and Milton and other areas, or are we just going to keep on with PM10?
Chairman?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have, for this annual plan year, a PM2.5 monitor to be installed.
Where?
Dunedin.
All right.
And the reason for that is because PM10, PM2.5 is really a catch-all of various sources. Can be pollen, can be sea salt, can be combustion.
Right.
Particulates, diesel, just a vast variety of types of particles. It's a size fraction. And most of combustion falls into the size range of PM2.5. So most of what we measure in central Otago, whether we measure with a PM2.5 monitor or a PM10 monitor, most of what we're actually collecting, sampling, counting, and reporting will probably be 95% of that will be 2.5 in reality. In Dunedin, we've got a larger variety of sources. We've got home heating. We've got industrial emissions. We've also got a lot of entrainment because of traffic. We've got more sea salt than you might have in Central. So the size of what we're collecting, that ratio, that composition will be much more mixed. There will be a component of 2.5. There'll also be a component of larger than 2.5 to 10, much broader mix. That's what we're hoping to understand in Dunedin, is what that mix is made up of. But in Central, we're very confident that most of what we're measuring falls into that 2.5 size category. Having said that, I think when you look at the long-term plan objectives, that there will be proposals for PM 2.5 monitors also up in Central. But the first one, I would recommend Dunedin.
Okay, but that still doesn't answer the first question, which is, where is the proven link between Central Otago or even Otago health problems and this issue?
Okay.
Where's the empirical proof?
The one study that was done in Otago was 2007.
Yep. And I keep getting quoted.
Right.
Never seen it, despite asking for it.
Just on that, can we just have a commitment that we could have that link circulated so we can actually have a look and analyse for ourselves rather than on the hoof having to give us a quick overview?
I think as we've discussed.
But that's the only one, is it? That particular study?
Yeah. There's significant difficulty in measuring health effects in very small towns. And this is one of the reasons for statistical significance. And that's one of the reasons we'd like to see if we can devise a better methodology to help us understand and quantify what those health effects are.
Right, so you see the deficit in research as well?
There is a gap, yes.
Yeah, because certainly. At the moment in Central Otago, I can tell you that there is a perception that there isn't a problem. And I can understand that perception because when they're asked, show us some proof that there's a problem, we can't.
And we would like to devise a methodology that will help us understand that effect.
Shouldn't we have the proof before we go to the strategy? In other words, shouldn't you identify you've got a problem first and then you go and find the answer?
I'm reluctant for us to have a debate about it right here and now. What I would like, though, is that if we have if we have the report circulated, and then if we need to revisit the issue and have a further discussion, because it's a little bit difficult. I mean, I haven't read the report, the 2007 report that's been referred to, and probably others around the table haven't seen it as well. So it would be useful to inform ourselves.
Cool. I was just going to ask, where were we going to have that debate? Where would we have it?
There's not much point.
The debate's had when we set a... NES, isn't it, for the ear? Yeah, NES. And so we actually have a directive on what we're to do. Currently PM10, so we're following that and expecting perhaps a change to PM2.5. So, yeah, we have to implement that. Yes, it would be brilliant to have some more research, but as we all understand, it's so difficult with small towns and, you know, a whole lot of confounding variables. And I like the idea of devising better methods of testing that, but having sat through the ear plan change and heard from all sorts of medical experts who also thought that it was going to be very difficult to devise a scientifically robust program. But in saying that, we know that PM2.5 and even PM10 does have health effects across the world. We've been told by the NES to do this, so we're doing it. And I think nationally, great, good to have this discussion. You've got a list there of 20 priorities that's been discussed. We can't really alter those at this stage, it's just one council. We can give feedback though. I think of that list, you've focused in on the ones that I think are important for Otago as well. The one that we've talked about quite a bit is what Council Laws are saying, though, which is weigh up the effects of being cold versus the effects of clean air. Okay, that's a philosophy, but ideally, and actually in the RMA, we can't have either. We can't have an adverse effect, be it dirty air. So we need to think of a way of having warm houses and clean air. We have to have both. And it would be, maybe we've got enough data to say what the health effects of being cold are and in small towns, but that's the one thing that I would like to push for if we were having an Otago list, of just how important is it to be warm, and noting that we also can't have dirty air, then that's our conundrum, and how are we going to fix that together? And stuff like our clean air programs are so important, but... Okay, these are a national list. Agree with which ones you've got on there that are important for us, and support the recommendations.
Are you happy to move?
I'll move the recommendations.
Can I ask a question? I've had my hand up for a while.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Bell. Can I just take Councillor Robertson? You're happy to move?
Yep, I'll move.
And the seconder?
Yeah, okay.
Councillor Neal,
sorry, Councillor Brown. To speak to it after Councillor Bell.
Sorry, Councillor Bell.
Yep, thank you. I just wanted a wee bit of clarification, Ms. Mills, with regards to the pollen and what effect in the likes of Alexandra that would have been on that 2.5, because the Sunday of Blossom Festival, you couldn't even see the town nor the air drone where the air pageant wheels and wings were on because of the pollen coming off the pine trees. On Monday, the effect of the community was all asthmaticy and hay fever and whatever because of that. So I was very interested for you to tell me about the pollen effect there, and I just wanted you to help me with that.
Sure. When you look at a size fraction and you look at what particles constitute the fines, which are the 2.5 and smaller, and the, what we call the coarse fraction, and those are particles that are 2.5 to 10 microns, pollen generally fits in the coarse fraction, in the larger fraction. It's very close to PM10. A lot of it is larger than PM10, which is why it's so visible. Health effects there, of course, hay fever, all of those sorts of issues. But a different set of, and I'm not a health expert, but a different set of conditions than... brought on by breathing 2.5 and smaller, which is what's able to get down through your respiratory system much more easily. But certainly an irritant, but I don't believe there's been any evidence of long-lasting adverse health effects from pollen.
I guess I'm just getting back to perhaps where Council Laws is coming from. I never really hear anything about the effect of health from families. Smoke, but that is one time when I do hear about the effects of people's health, and you do see it, the evidence, your vehicles are all yellow and stained, and your houses are too if you don't shut the windows, so it is quite bad in that community. I just wanted to know what that reading, how that affected the readings.
Thank you. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Councillor Robinson. The aspiration for a modern society has got to be warm homes and clean air, for goodness sake. And the NES and other things reaffirm that. My question is in relation to the affordable monitoring methods, because it seems to me, you know, one of the things that we've always strived for is to get some economical tools for measuring water quality in rivers. And if we had the same... We're not quite there, but but if we had something similar for... aspirationally for air. So, for example, you go to the chimney, you shine your torch light, and it goes good, bad. Then, to a certain degree, it's effects-based. And to a certain degree, people can learn to manage and take responsibility for their heating and their fires and their wood burners and so forth. You know, because like we're striving to get the silver bullet for the perfect burner. We've been trying to do that, you know, as long as I've been on council. And then but a lot of people out there in the bush are smarter than we think they are, you know. But so my question through you, Mr. Chair, to Deborah is affordable monitoring methods, Are we talking possibly about that type of thing? Where the average household can actually measure what's their contribution to the air quality, and secondly, the regulatory authority can do the same. And we need to, if we had our policy better, then we've got some teeth.
Ms. Mills?
Much like water quality, that's a tool we'd all love to have.
To
be able to do that. And it has been talked about quite frequently in the air quality community, the development of such a device.
And is that what that's meant there under three, affordable monitoring methods or not?
Affordable monitoring methods, also, I guess, more what I was referring to, but in addition, is, you know, we base our results on a point in each town.
Yeah.
I mean, that's resource hungry, very expensive. And in every air shed, we've got a high standard, high quality air quality monitor. And I think what many of us are looking for are low cost monitors to be able to understand the air shed better as a whole.
Okay, so you and I are talking about different things.
Those are two different.
So the instrument that I talked about, mm-hmm. you said you'd love to have, mm-hmm. but it's not even on the list.
I believe it probably falls in the bigger list of technological solutions. I mean, what's highlighted here are some of the ideas. There are more than that. Looking at technology, of course, would include tools like that.
So some of them are conceptual at this stage, and further detail will fall out at a later date in terms of just how these potential mechanisms may.
Yeah, I'd like to be on the list.
You want it on the list?
Okay.
We'll think about it anyway.
So you're still happy to second the motion that Councillor Robertson...
I don't know. Is Deborah going to put it on the list?
I think it's something that you make a good point, Councillor Scott, and it's something that I imagine will evolve over time. Those suggested.
Okay, on that basis, I'll second it.
Oh, excellent. Brilliant.
Horse trading.
So it's been moved and seconded, and noting that the 2007 report will be circulated to the council or councillors.
Which we have had.
Perhaps not in the last 12 months. Yep. So moved and seconded. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. That's the two, A and B. Report be noted, and also that the ideas presented in this report are endorsed for consideration for the inclusion of the 2018-28 draft long-term plan. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. That concludes the technical committee meeting. We will now start the Finance and Corporate Committee.